few thoughts came to me from the book of Romans, Romans 15, kind of in the same connection was the Wadi brother said, I read the first three verses and then I go to verse 7. But we that are strong to bear the infirmities of the weak, and not to please ourselves, let each one of us please his neighbor with a view of what is good to edification. For the Christ also did not please himself, but according as it is written, the reproaches of them that reproacheth thee have fallen upon me. Verse 7, wherefore receive ye one another, according as the Christ also has received you to the glory of God. One more verse, let me see. Yeah, in Romans 16, verse 13 says, salute Rufus, chosen in the Lord, and his mother and mine. Philippians chapter 2, 22, and yeah, but ye know the proof of him, that as a child a father he has served with me in the word of the glad tidings. So Book of Romans, here he comes to talk about, after we speak about the sin been dealt with, sins been dealt with by the Lord Jesus, after he speaks of no condemnation in those who are in Christ Jesus in chapter 8, and all these truths, beautiful truths, that the children of Israel still they have in chapter 14 and 13, they still have, or chapter 12 also, they still have commonwealth, right? They're gonna, a remnant of them, they will believe in the Lord in the end. So we come to all these truths been acknowledged by all these saints. He comes to the truth of how we deal, how we bear the infirmities of each other, not the burden, but the infirmities of each other. So I don't bear my brother and own his burden, but even his infirmity is deeper than just his burden, the infirmity. He talks about even before, in chapter 14, in the half of it, he talks about that how we should, if someone is eats or drinks, or someone eats meat or he doesn't eat meat, how we should handle it. If I eat meat, the other person doesn't eat meat, although I know I can't eat the meat, there's nothing said God, I can't eat pork, but I know my dear brother somehow, he says that he doesn't eat pork. If I invite him to my house and I know he doesn't eat pork, I know that although I have the liberty to eat pork, I will not eat it so I don't stumble him. That's how we are to live. So that's why he is the main thing about how he's saying now to bear the infirmities also of each other. And even a smirk in your face, that he will look at it, he will know that you're not happy with him or with her. That also will offend that brother. We just should be careful with our smirks, how we even behave in a way, or like doing this to my head that, oh, I'm not happy over him that was called. That's all important. The little things, we were talking about the little things. And little things are important, how we behave. One time I was in a meeting and a brother was ministering the word. And another brother passed by just coming to the meeting. He came in late and they had some conflict in between them. He diverted from his ministry. He brought a verse. He used a verse in the Bible to hurt the brother. Even we use the Bible, a verse to hurt a brother. That brother left, turned. He didn't show up for 3 weeks. We had to call him what's happened. He was, I'm very hurt. We're using the Bible to hurt my feelings, and that was not good. So it's important how we deal with each other. That's how he's talking about. He says that we bear the infirmity of the weak, and why we should do it. And not to please ourselves. It's important that when I bear the infirmity of my brother, I'm not doing it because I want to be looking good in between the brethren. Oh, brother Milad, look, he is so good. He is bearing the infirmity of this brother, and I be boasting to pleasing myself. You don't do it for that. You do it for what? For edification. That's what he's saying. The reason that you're doing it, that's for to please yourself. But you do it for edification, and for his good. Why and who is, everyone has a reference point in his life. Everyone, you go to a rich man, his reference point is money. all his, whatever he refers to, I can buy. I can go to my bank account. I want to have a buy a new house, I go buy it. That's a rich man. That's how their reference point. The believer reference point is Christ. And that's what he's saying here. Why I do bear the infirmity of my brother for his good and for his edification, and not to please myself. Why I should do it? Because of Christ. Christ, what he did, Christ, for the Christ also did not please himself. Who is my reference point? Is Christ. Why I do it for my brother to bear his infirmity? Because Christ has done it. Even when Christ came here, he did not come here to please himself. He came to do the will of the Father. Even when he went to the cross, he wasn't happy going to the cross. He said, the scripture says he was grieved. His soul was grieved. He knew what he's going to go through, and he was grieved. But he did not please himself. He could have said, I have legions of thousands of legions, they could come in and just deliver me. Or he just could deliver himself. You know, the Lord has even power. You know, there's a verse says he was so in control. Even there's a verse in, I believe, the book of John, when he was on the cross, it says that he bowed his head and he surrendered the spirit. When a man dies, he first delivers the spirit, and as a result of it, his head will bow down because there's no more power, there's no more things to keep it. But the Lord didn't do it this way. He bowed his head, and in his own control, he delivered the spirit. So he was sovereign. Even he could deliver himself, but he didn't do it because he's not here to please himself. He is here to please God and to please his Father. And that's what his reference point, that's what is our reference point also when we deal with each other. That's why we bear the infirmity, not because I want to be looking good in between the brethren and have a big name, but because I have a Christ who saved me and who saved my brother. And that's how we do it. Even when they looked at Christ, he says here that the reproaches of thee fall upon me. When they looked at Christ, they saw God. So the reproaches of what God will bear, he bear. They happen on him. So that's how people looked at him. I hope that, and my prayer is that when they look at me and when they look at you, and they will see Christ, even when we be reproached, even we do it for Christ, because he was also reproached, because they saw God in him. May they also see Christ in you and me, even if that's going to cause us to be reproached by others, but still we have it for Christ. When Christ, it says, did not please himself. You see, even he's not even talking about the service of God. You know, there's some kind, when you go serve the Lord, there's a kind of pleasing to yourself. You're serving the Lord, and if I am serving the Lord, and Brother Bill comes to me, and he's trying, we have some things going on that he doesn't like the way I do it, the first thing I will say, he's trying to stop my service. Oh, but my lad, I thought serving the Lord is traveling, is going around, is serving. Who loves to serve? No one likes to serve. Now, what you like? Because I know me serving the Lord, I will have something. You know, Milad is serving the Lord. You know, you have some sort of achievement in it when you serve the Lord. It has to do something with yourself, a name of yourself a little bit. Maybe not very from different brother is different, but it's there. Because no one likes, if I go to any brother who serves the Lord, tell him, stop serving the Lord there. Let's go wash, as we said yesterday, let's go wash the saints' feet. Stop serving the Lord, go wash feet. No, he's not that. But the Lord, when he came here, he did not come in here that he will join a company, that he will to please himself, or that he build a name for himself. He came to serve a company because that's the will of his God and Father, that he comes to earth and he will join a company. We have a Lord who did not please himself. We do it because whatever he did, he joined a company to do the will of God. So when I do something, I serve the Lord, not for me, it's for the Lord. He asked me to do it, and I do it faithfully. I read Philippians as a child, as a father, as a child. The verse said it there, because Paul was at that time was very old in his age. Timothy was very young. Two contrasts. Old, slow, takes things more with wisdom, more with trying to do things slow and to think before he act. Timothy is very active, young man, that he wants to just go around, just go. But they both could get along. They both could have something in common to serve for the glad tidings, because the Lord was in them. Because Paul showed him what is a father figure is, and he adopted him as his only, as his son. And he let him, told him, do not let anyone even to despise the youth. And he took him and he tried and he shaped his spirit life, and he now serving with him. He did not make fun of him and make fun of his accent when he came to serve the Lord or to do, oh, you don't know anything. He didn't. He found a father figure and he followed him, and now he is serving the Lord. And he said about Rufus, his mom or his mother and mine. What is an expression that to say his mother and mine? It's just adoring, this is a loving expression, it's just salute, enfolding in arms. You know, that's how he say in term. In Romans 16, you see the sitting of the assembly, you see there, maybe a lot of people think there's no much teaching, there's a lot of teaching in Romans 16. You see different peoples of different rank, people who are rich, people who were Jewish before even Paul that was became to be a believer, people who believed in the Lord before Paul, and relatives even to Paul who believe in the Lord. He start even Romans 16 with two sisters. For us who think that brethren, or the brethren as men, not men, brethren, that they are the leading and they are the most important, Paul starts Romans a whole chapter with two sisters. So he gives them the priority. He put them in the front. So that's just to mark it that don't underestimate or undermine or whatever you call it. Their sisters are not important. They are, if Paul put them in chapter 16 in the first two and underscore them and highlight their names, let's also we do that with our sisters, that we also make much of our sisters and their service to the Lord. You see sisters, you see a rich man, a Jewish close to Paul. You see even a bondman there. There's a one, his name is meaning number three. One is number four in the scriptures in Romans 16. That's their mean, the slaves. They're all sitting down together in unity without having these kind of things to differentiate between them, honoring the Lord, a beautiful sitting of assembly. Question is, are we as an assembly? In these days where Satan and a lot of people attacking the assembly of God, are we as an assembly, we are ready to be in that kind of a sitting where we can actually face these things? Do I have a father in the assembly where I can, as our dear brother yesterday said, to go and expose myself and talk to a brother without the brother judge me, without I be more feel secure to open up? Do I have a sister or a mom? Can I call a mom in this assembly where can I go tell her, mom, I need this. I'm kind of not happy with this. Can I open up without all the brethren around to know what's my last problem? Can a young sister find an older brother and could be confined to him and just open up to him and say, my dear brother, I have 1, 2, 3 in my life. Can she do that? That's what we need in an assembly. That's assembly sitting that we can actually stand up in these days and know exactly how we can be to bear infirmity of each other. Yes, it's a hard time, and we all should be together united until he comes and take us to be home.
Let's continue in this line of thinking in the book of Daniel about how is it that we can serve the Lord and do it in a way that is effective and honoring to him and useful for others. Daniel chapter 2, we won't read this whole passage, but of course this entire chapter is really one story in the experience of Daniel, and it begins with Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 2, verse 1, the king of the Persian Empire, and he has dreams, it says in verse 1, and they were very troubling. He woke up in the middle of the night after this dream, and he couldn't go back to sleep, and he desired to know the dream, he says in verse 3. He called all of his wisest counselors, he called the magicians, the astrologers, the sorcerers, and this particular group, the Chaldeans, who were among his court, who would be able to give advice to him. And he says, I want to know the dream. And they say in verse 4, well, tell us what the dream was. We will explain its meaning to you. And he says, no, you tell me the dream and its meaning. Now, it's interesting to consider different views of this. Some think that he actually remembered the dream himself, and he was putting his wise men to the test, because he had seen at the end of chapter 1 how much wiser Daniel and his three friends were. They were very accomplished at the end of chapter 1. And so it's possibly true, because he just says to them, I want to know the dream in verse 3, and he may have remembered the dream and wanted to see if they were really truthful in their claims to be wise and insightful. It may be that he completely forgot it. We often think of it that way in this chapter too, and that certainly fits the context as well, that he was just troubled by the dream and he couldn't really remember it. This happens to us also. We wake up, we know we had a terrible dream. We don't really know why it was so terrible, but it was really very distressing. Either way, he demanded of them, you tell me the dream, and you tell me what it means. And they say, no one has ever asked this before. Verse 10, there's not a man on earth who can tell the king's matter. Nobody ever asks something like this. And so in verse 12, he is furious, and he gives the command to destroy them all. And in verse 13, we are told that death began to occur. They began the process of putting the wise men to death, and this would include Daniel and his companions. And so Daniel is confronted by the captain of the king's guard in verse 14. Literally, the captain of the king's guard comes to Daniel to say, I have to put you to death. It says, Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. And there he is, speaking with Daniel. That's why he's there. There already had been a relationship with him. I believe he's mentioned in chapter 1 also, but you can see that there is this relationship here. There's this conversation about it. And Daniel asks for time, and he seeks the mercies of the God of heaven. Verse 18, so that Daniel and his companions might not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. And I'd like to just make this link here with what we already heard. Persisting in the course of life that God has set out before us, this is always a desirable goal. We had the references in Romans about the desire to bear one another's burdens. Here, in a very literal sense, Daniel is bearing the burdens of his companions. And actually, in an even larger sense, he's bearing the burdens of these unbelievers. Because life is a worthy goal. Death for an unjust reason is not a worthy goal. Judgment that is unjust is exposed by the words of Daniel. Why is it being done this way? But he does this in a way that is going to honor the God whom he serves. It's a really beautiful phrase that comes up a few times in this chapter. The God of heaven. The Chaldeans were focused on all the people that they knew on earth. There's nobody on earth who can tell the king's matter. Kings and lords and rulers don't ask this of magicians and astrologers and the people who have a reputation for wisdom. And they were right. There was no man on earth. There was nobody who could accomplish this demand. So Daniel didn't ask anybody that he knew on earth. He sought for the mercies of the God of heaven. And the answer comes in verse 19, and Daniel blesses the God of heaven. And we have this beautiful expression of praise in verses 20 to 23. And then Daniel goes to the captain of the guard in verse 24, and he says, "Take me to the king. I will tell him the interpretation." And he comes to the king and says in verse 28, "There is a God in heaven who reveals secrets." And he says in verse 30, "But as for me, this secret has not been revealed to me because I have more wisdom than anyone living, but for our sakes who make known the interpretation to the king, and that you may know the thoughts of your heart." And Daniel serves the Lord by exalting God's greatness, exalting God's mercy, seeking mercies of the God of heaven, seeking the revelation from him, the understanding from him that was necessary, and then using the opportunity, even speaking to an unbeliever, while he's bearing the burdens of those who serve, he uses the opportunity to highlight the weaknesses of those who did not trust the God of heaven and the firm foundation of those who did trust the God of heaven. There is a God in heaven who reveals secrets. And he is not just a God in heaven who reveals secrets in some random whimsical way. He reveals secrets to you, O king. He wants you to know what your thoughts mean. It's even interesting to consider that in verse 30, that you may know the thoughts of your heart. And as we go through the interpretation, we won't do that at this moment, but the interpretation begins with the head of this statue that Nebuchadnezzar saw. He saw this great statue, and the head was of gold. And he says to Nebuchadnezzar, "You are that head of gold. Your kingdom is great. Your kingdom is filled with glory." And probably those were the thoughts of Nebuchadnezzar's heart. But what is the rest of the dream? Ever-increasing weakness. Ever-increasing decay. Until finally, the God of heaven would send that stone that was not cut out even with hands, and that stone crushed the statue and became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. It was an interpretation that glorified Christ himself. God was revealing to Nebuchadnezzar the deficiency of the thoughts of his heart. The thoughts of his heart were probably my greatness. And God gave him a vision, a dream, that revealed his weakness. And we know the history of Nebuchadnezzar. I'm sure we're going to see Nebuchadnezzar in heaven. By the end of chapter 4, he realizes the greatness and glory of the God of Daniel and confesses him himself. At this point, he's still on the pathway towards faith, if we would put it that way. He is learning from someone who trusts in the God of heaven. And Daniel, who says, "This answer is not because of me. It's because there is a God who reveals secrets." And so in this meek and lowly and humble way, he presents the wisdom of God, and he gives the answer to this unbelieving Gentile ruler, the most powerful man in the world at that time, I believe. And his kingdom was great, tremendous kingdom. And he is informed of his own weakness by one who brings the wisdom and the mercy and the power of God all to bear on this man's experience. This is the way that we can bear one another's burdens, by magnifying God in the lives of ourselves, not taking a place of ourselves that is undue of who we are, but taking every opportunity to make God great in the lives and the eyes of others.